Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for minute 96 through 97 of Dune Part 2. And this is a good one, man.
Yeah.
I think the next two that we're going to get are going to be some pretty good ones, at least. The next three, we're getting some good minutes this week.
We're gonna have a fucking kind of banger week. If, yeah. You know, all right, so last week, you know, we shat on a lot of things. This week, you know, I think last week we said that this week might not be able to redeem itself. I kind of disagree.
Okay.
It's a lot of exposition this week, though. Definitely not a action-packed week.
No.
So
we pick back up with that blurry silhouette from the end of yesterday's minutes, and we figured out who it is. It is Gurney looking through some binoculars.
Nope.
There's two lenses. He's only using one of them, but there are two lenses.
Okay, so there's... If I had to guess, the top one, which is significantly smaller than the bottom one, is most likely a rangefinder.
Sure. Okay. Well, we don't know, but there are two knocks, so I'm calling them binocs.
But it's the same device that Paul used when we first got his reveal of his eyes of Ibad.
I didn't see the second scope on those.
It was there.
Okay. All right, so a monocular, a looking device.
A looking glass?
A looking glass, yes. And Paul's beside him. And Gurney, like, points out something and hands the specs over to Paul.
Yep.
And we get to see a very small...
It's like a cave in the cliffside.
I called it like a cutout, a cave. Yeah, something like that.
Completely inconspicuous.
Yeah, just looks like everything else around it. And so as Paul's looking at this cutout in the mountain, we hear from off screen someone say, "It's right under everybody's noses." And we kind of get a wider shot of the group here, and Chani and Stilgar are with them. So this is the very unceremonious meeting that we get on screen of Gurney and Stilgar.
Which is also part of why we decided last week to rank last week's episodes very low.
Yeah. So just, ugh. I would have loved to have actually seen the meeting. Maybe they filmed that and that was just something that got cut. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyways. And Stilgar, which this you alluded to this last week, but Stilgar just goes, or his contributions to this week's of minutes is basically laugh lines.
Yeah.
He just says, "Not clever."
And Gurney's like, "That's the idea. No one would ever look there because it's obvious." And Stilgar just reiterates, "Not clever."
Oh, now, I do love to see sassy Stilgar again, though. We love sassy Stilgar.
We love a sassy Stilgar. And Gurney gets a little sassy, too, because he's like, "Well, did you find it?" And Stilgar's like, "I wasn't looking."
Yeah.
So,
which is fun. I mean, this dynamic between Gurney and Stilgar is very, it's a very interesting dynamic. You know, spoiler alerts for later on in the series, they become really good friends.
I hope that's something that as they go into Messiah and as they go into Children, they definitely kind of like foster more of. The only thing that concerns me is that Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem maybe don't want to keep doing Dune for many movies.
Oh no, I don't think that they will. I mean, if Paul's story is wrapped up, then again, we're speculating, and I want to have a much larger conversation about this. But the main cast that we have come to know in the movies will not be a part of any future.
No.
Dune Enterprises.
Well, even for Children, right? Like, I don't know if Josh Brolin would want to work with a director that isn't Denis Villeneuve or Javier Bardem or, you know, Rebecca Ferguson or like any of these other, you know, actors and actresses. Because when they all talk about their time on Dune, like working with Denis is one of the things that they're all like consistently just like, "Holy shit, I get to fucking do this."
Yeah.
Right. So like,
well, you never know. Maybe that HBO paycheck will be big.
I don't know.
So Paul continues the conversation and he asks Gurney, "How many heads exactly?" Talking about the warheads. Get your mind out of the gutter, John.
I knew what he was talking about.
And Gurney he's so like gung ho, like let's blow it up. He's such like just a meathead almost in these minutes. And he goes, enough to blow up the whole planet.
You know who Gurney kind of reminds me of? You know, in Full Metal Jacket, the scene when they're in the helicopter and there's the gunner that's just like shooting innocent rice farmer workers.
Yeah. 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 Just, I mean, he's a trigger happy meathead.
Yeah.
Right here.
Like,
it's not very poetic. It's not very warrior poet of him.
No. But like, that's the same feeling of character that I get from Gurney in this moment where it's just like, they're all VC.
Sure.
Like, no. Holy shit, dude, chill the fuck out.
This raises a question to me. Because we've talked about how Chani's character seems to be, regressing a little bit. And I kind of feel the same way about Gurney's character in this moment. Are they falling into just archetypes?
Yes.
And that's not good. They lose all of their nuance if they do that.
Yeah. I think that is a very accurate and valid statement. And I don't know why... Because the screenplay was written by Denis Villeneuve and John Spathis, I believe. And they're both very good writers, and I don't know why this... I mean, I'll call it what it is. This laziness is happening there. Because these are very complex characters that have a lot of very driving motivations for all the things that they do. Like, yes, Gurney is very gung-ho about his duke and his house and his warriors that he wants to seek revenge for.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of the conversation between Gurney and Stilgar that is just like, I mean, I feel like a broken record and like reiterating, but it's missing, and it's, I think, very important that it should have been in the movie to at least align their, or maybe not align initially, but like get an understanding of their motivations amongst each other rather than just Paul being the vessel for everyone's feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right. We'll talk a lot more on that as we go along.
Part of that makes me also wonder why, or it makes me wonder if that is also the reason why Hasimir Fenring's parts were cut, because they're not, you know, conversations that are happening on or through Paul.
Oh, so you think they were cut to keep Paul in the center? Yeah, maybe.
Like you could, okay, so you could argue the whole Margot Fenring going to Gaty Prime to look at Fade thing doesn't, you know, center around Paul.
But it centers the antagonist of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Gurney and Hasimir Fenring talking to each other is kind of, you know, orbiting Paul, but isn't directly involving him.
That's very fair. I don't know. No. Just, you know, we could spend hours and hours just talking about what we don't have in this movie. So let's talk about what we do have, because we cut scenes, or we cut to a new scene here. We are at the cave entrance, and there's a lot more than just the four of them around.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole group of Fedaiken, notably our favorite white-bearded Fedaiken warrior.
Yep.
Who I don't remember what name we gave him way back when. But
no clue.
But I love that he is a, you know, repeating character just kind of in background or whatever. And I also love that there's one Fremen man who's just like perched up on a rock doing doing his Batman impression.
Yeah, there's gotta be just someone like perched.
Looming.
So as they make their way inside, we come up to this really, really big door.
Huge.
And, yeah, it's really, really massive door. And it's got the Atreides eagle carved into it.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, why did they do this?
If they're trying to hide it, that's not. Hold on. You have a very obvious console with four lights right next to this big Atreides door.
And I wonder what's here.
Oh, and it's like, okay, you don't think that the Harkonnen or the Sardaukar or any other, you know, people that could come across this have the ability to carve through rock?
Right. It's so it just feels like, okay, so you put it behind the rock, sure. But even still, that's out in the open, and it doesn't look like there's any defenses to get to this door other than it just being slightly behind this rock face.
Well, it's just under their noses, so they wouldn't look for it.
But okay, but what if they did? You know, it's just, it's so, so silly. Yeah. Like, you could still have the four-finger lock, which we'll talk about more tomorrow, but have it just at an innocuous place. At an innocuous rock face or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been fine. That would have honestly made
more
sense.
And put the lock behind like a smaller rock that you can just lean up against it or whatever. Yeah, so that way the lights aren't just right there.
We have Heidekeys. Heidekeys exist in this universe. Now we could hide a front door key in a rock.
You can hide a front door key anywhere.
Yeah.
You can hide a front door key in a sock.
That's true. I saw this and I was like, oh, well, that kind of defeats the purpose of hiding it. If it's just going to, you know, broadcast that, hey, this is something for the Atreides is right behind this. It just seems silly to me.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem silly to Chani though, because, the last scene that we get of this minute is her looking up at the door in like wonder and fear.
She's kind of shakily breathing. And I don't know if that's just because like they just climbed up this rock face or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or what, but, or if it's just like the fear of the moment, but
I think she's just full of apprehension and just anxiety right now.
Her eyes are kind of darting around and everything. So yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. She's not, this is not something that, she's used to. A new player has been introduced, to the board. Like I think I said last week, and she does not know what the fuck is going on. But that is all I got for this minute, man.
Yeah. This is probably the latest minute of the week, so...
Sure.
I say we just go ahead and move on from here.
All right.
All righty. Well, the Dune Minute is online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode, and we'll see you then.
See
you.